Welcome to the Getting Clean, Living Clean workshop of the WCNA 31. My name is Danny. I'm an addict from Rhode Island. Can we please open this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the serenity prayer, please? God, grant us serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay, it says to read announcements, but there's none. But I have one announcement. I'll be hosting a naked twister party in my room tonight after the concert. All women are encouraged to come. See me for further details. Okay, we'll get going. Lori from Daytona has been asked to read What is Narcotics Anonymous program.
Hi, my name's Lori and I'm an addict. What is the Narcotics Anonymous program? NA is a nonprofit fellowship or society of men and women for whom drugs have become a major problem. We are recovering addicts who meet regularly to help each other stay clean. This is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. There is only one requirement for membership, the desire to stop using. We suggest that you keep an open mind and give yourself a break. Our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. The most important thing about them is that they work. There are no strings attached to NA, no pledges to... We are not affiliated with any other organizations. We have no initiation fees or dues, no pledges to sign, no promises to make to anyone. We are not connected with any political, religious, or law enforcement groups and are under no surveillance at any time. Anyone may join us regardless of age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, or lack of religion. We are not interested in what or how much you used or who your connections were, what you've done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only in what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. The newcomer is the most important person in any meeting, because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. We have learned from our group experience that those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean.
Thank you. Karen from Kissimmee has been asked to read Why Are We Here?
I'm named Karen. Before coming to the fellowship of NA, we could not manage our own lives. We could not live and enjoy life as other people do. We had to have something different. We thought we had found it in drugs. We placed their use ahead of the welfare of our families, our wives, husbands, and our children. We had to have drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibility, we were actually creating our own problems. We seemed to be incapable of facing life on its own terms. Most of us realized that in our addiction, we were slowly committing suicide, but addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we had lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us ended up in jail or sought help through medicine, religion, and psychiatry. None of these methods was sufficient for us. Our disease always resurfaced or continued to progress until, in desperation, we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realized we were sick people. We suffer from a disease from which there is no known cure. It can, however, be arrested at some point, and recovery is then possible.
Thank you. Okay, at this time, I would like to introduce the speaker. The speaker is Fran from Hawaii.
I'm Fran with laryngitis, and I'm an addict from Hawaii. We're going to try this. Getting clean was really easy for me. I went to prison. Now, I know there were lots of drugs in prison. I had access to anything I wanted. But for some strange reason, The prison locked me up in the psychiatric unit for the criminally insane. And I never knew why. But there were 30 women in that unit. And 15 of them were 15 of the most dangerous bitches I'll ever cross paths with. So I wasn't about to use any drugs. I needed my wits about me at every moment, so I didn't use. Coming out wasn't so easy. I think getting clean was the easiest part for me. And then I had to come out and learn how to live. And I didn't have a goddamn clue. I remember getting my first job and getting a paycheck saying, they gotta be kidding me. Because I never worked. I was a criminal. And I thought, I can't do this. And then I had two kids that were waiting for me. They were 10 and 11. I didn't have a clue how to be a mother. So out I came to a world I wanted no part of. I really think if they had violated me that first year, I wouldn't have cared. I would have been back where I felt safe. And along the way, I heard about an organization of ex-convicts in New York. It was called the Fortune Society. And I made that call because I needed help. And I started hanging out with them, and they went to meetings something like ours. And there was another woman there. And I walked in one day, her name was Jeanette, and she said, I can't stand you for another minute. We're going to a meeting. I didn't have a clue again. So we went to this meeting. I didn't understand that either. They would all laugh at what I thought was some sad stuff. And I didn't know why they were laughing. And when she laughed, we laughed, she said, you're disappointed because you thought some magic pill was going to happen. And I did. So I said, yeah, she said, you got to keep coming back. I committed crimes for probably the first 18 months of my recovery because I didn't know not to. You see, you bunch all lied to me. You said all I had to do when I walked in here is don't pick up and go to a meeting. Well, I did that. But nobody said, you can't be doing this other shit no more. So finally she told me, no more. And I began, if I have to think about everything NA gave me, it was to teach me how to live clean. Jeanette became my sponsor, and she was from the old school. I used to call her up, and I'd say, I'm not coming to the meeting tonight. It's snowing out. And she'd say, what a lucky dope fiend you were. You never had to get high in the snow. So I'd go to a meeting. And then I'd get to a meeting. I'd be nuts. I got to talk to you. I got to talk to you. She says, after the meeting. But I need to talk to you. Go make the coffee. I'd be bending. Big butters, big thing. I'd be banging them in the kitchen. And then I'd have it made. I said, I need to talk to you. If you still need to talk to me after the meeting, we'll talk. So after the meeting, I'd go up, can I talk now? No, clean the coffee pot. And that's the kind of days it was. But it was also very bad days for us. They didn't want addicts in the rooms. They were afraid. All they knew is something good worked for them, and they didn't want it disrupted, and I more than understand that. So I gave up. It was just too horrible. I started getting better. I worked. I still wasn't a good parent. I was getting half-assed at it, but I wasn't good. And then I went out to speak at a jail. And one of the things I said to the women in the jail, they had this horrible thing going on in New York. If you were coming out of the jail, you got a welfare check and pick your kids up on the way. Wasn't that a bright thing? So I went out and told the women, don't pick your kids up. Get out and get on your feet for them. Get on your feet for yourself. Wherever the hell the kids are, the damage is already done. A little bit more won't hurt. It got to be for you. And then one day, a woman walked in my office and she said, I did what you said. I left the kids where they are, and now I need to get my life together. And we became best friends. We were inseparable. People we worked with didn't like being around us because she's of a darker hue. I'm white. And all we used to do was have these racial fights. She'd say, I was a disgrace to white people because I lived in sweatpants and sweatshirts. Well, along the way, she relapsed. People used to say she had a slip. She had a landslide. And then I heard about something about N.A. So I'd ask everybody, where's N.A.? Nobody knew. It was underground in New York. So we finally found some meetings, and I started taking her. And we'd sit there, as soon as the coffee break came, she wanted out. And I'd go with her. Then all of a sudden came the night she wanted to leave, and I didn't. And then she stopped coming, and I stayed. And it took a lot of years for her to come back. But she's back, and she's sitting here. And that's part of living clean. I lost a daughter in recovery. And I know there was a time, if that had happened earlier, I probably wouldn't even have been at the wake of the funeral. I would have been out. But I sat at her wake with my friend sitting next to me. But a lot of friends came. You don't have that unless you're clean. And you start to form this body that's going to be around you and be your support system. And it's so powerful. But we never look at it as one big thing. We look at little things along the way. And all of a sudden, I started to create memories. And I remember the night my daughter died. The woman, her neighbor, came out with a round tray and shot glasses and was giving everybody a drink. And I said, I don't want one. She says, can I get you something? And I said, yeah. And a friend said to me, don't tell me you're going to have her make you a cup of tea. I drink tea all day long. And that's what I wanted, a cup of tea. It never dawned on me to pick anything up. It wasn't my life anymore. And I wasn't going to walk away from what I was establishing in my life. Time went on. I finally got a terrific sponsor in California, Vita, who has since died. Vita and I were in prison 37 years ago together. You know, and then one more piece of history got me. And somehow I always knew I wanted to be in the social services. No tea, I got water. So along came the government, good old smart government, and said, we want to get a bunch of ex-cons together. Send them to college and study them. I said, knock yourself out. So I ended up with an associate's degree. Then I ended up with a bachelor's degree. And I never looked for jobs. I never. Somehow somebody would come to me and say, there's a job opening. They're looking for you. And I always knew to go. I call it the process. Elizabeth calls it the path. What I figured out a long time ago, if I get the hell out of my own way, life happens. The sad thing about life is we don't always get what we want. And we're not privileged to know why for at least 6 months. But But I always compare the higher power to a parent. And you have a house on a hill. The driveway slopes down. There's not a 3 or 4-year-old who wouldn't want to ride a bicycle down that hill. But as a parent, you know it's not the right thing, so you don't let them. And sometimes when we know smart stuff, our higher power knows it's not the right thing, so we don't get it. And all of a sudden, 6 months goes by, and you figure out, that's why I didn't get that when I wanted it. It's having that faith. And it's so easy to have faith when things are going good. So then I got offered a job on a railroad in New York. I can't begin to tell you. I think there was a time that politically I would have been against random testing, thinking it was interfering with people's rights. Now I'm working on a railroad with these big, huge trains and hundreds of people on it with the engineers stoned. So I changed my politics a little bit. It was infested with drugs. And I used to call them all my little bad boys. But what was great is they let me be the bad mama. I killed them. We all met up with each other last night. And one of them says, I'll never forget the day. I'm sending them out to counseling. And this one guy kept saying to me, where's my counselor? I said, get out of here. Get out of here and leave me alone. So he came back the next week. Fran, I took my door and I slammed it in his face. And to this day, he keeps saying, I'll never forget you slammed the door in my face. But for some reason, they let me. I used to have to wear work boots to be out on the tracks. And they used to call them Bobby work boots because they were so little. But it was kind of an easy place to get your foot in the door. I used to lie to them all the time. They'd come in and I'd say, you want to keep your job? Yeah. You go into a rehab or you're fucking fired. The best was I had no power to fire them. Thinking they'll get it someday. You know, they'll figure this out, but they never did. But to show you about faith, put somebody in a crazy square, put a lot of people in a crazy square. But this one guy went in, came out, went back to work, in about 6 months clean, trots his ass down my office. He said, I have to leave the railroad. Why? I got this great job offer with lots of money, and I'm never going to have that opportunity again. I said, nah, we have a suggestion. No major changes in the first year. You're not going nowhere. Nah, Fran, you don't understand. I said, yeah, I do. You don't understand. No major changes. He was so angry at me, but he listened. And 1 month later, there was the biggest scandal there was on the railroad with all this stealing going on. And everybody from above him up all got fired and he got promoted to the top. And I said to him, all you needed, Donald, was a little faith. Then I got a job opportunity. Somebody came in my office. I was going into private practice. And somebody came in the office and said, did you ever hear of a Dr. Joyce Wallace? I said, sure. She's the first doctor that diagnosed AIDS on the East Coast. She wants to meet with you. She needs you. I said, I'm not looking for a job. Just go meet with her. I said, okay. And even the day I met with her, I kept saying, why are you doing this? You're wasting a day. You don't want this job. And I walked in, and she had a 40-foot mobile unit, and she wanted someone to take it out in the streets and do the HIV testing with the homeless hookers all over New York. And there I was for the next 3 years working for Joyce. Again, I didn't want to leave the railroad because I loved messing with these guys. I loved. They all thought they were the biggest, toughest bikers. Ugh, the pussycats. We all went to a convention. And we get there, and the dance was going on, and I see them all the next morning. I said, so what'd you do last night? Nothing. We went to the dance, and we went up to the room by ourselves, because we didn't feel like listening to your mouth the next morning. And it was fun. We went to Montreal. And we go downtown walking in Montreal, and one of the railroad guys, two of them with me, and we see this guy coming along with this beret and all these patents all over his leather jacket. Well, they're bikers, so they thought he was a biker. And he has these two guys with him. So they introduce themselves and ask if he'll take a picture. And he introduced himself. He was the governor. So if nothing else, they weren't boring in my life. But I worked with those hookers for 3 years, and I loved every single minute of it. And then we came out here to speak. I came to Honolulu. And we went over to the Big Island, and I fell in love with it. And I just started sending resumes. And I got a job offer. And it wasn't a job I wanted. But it was a job I eventually fell in love with. And we moved. And a lot of events happened here. We had a foster daughter. We had her for 7 years. And she left. She became of age and left. And then she came back 5 months pregnant, on ice, beat up. And we took her back home. And the baby was born. We were there. And he was 2 months old. She booked. The guys took her back. And we've had him all these years. And in April, we adopted the 5-year-old in the blue shirt. So at 66, I got crazier than I ever was. But you know what's happening? I'm having a chance of being the mother I never, ever was. Some days I'll wake up and I'll be sitting with him in the rocking chair. And I'll look at my watch and say, oh, it's time to go to work. And he'll say, Nana, wait a few minutes. So I'll sit and rock some more. Because that's what's more important. Where when I was younger, it was the hustle of survival. You got a job, you got to get the train. I don't have that hustle anymore. I still work. While in Hawaii, I've had 2 major strokes and 5 little ones. As you can see, nothing stops the mouth. But I want to tell you, I'm laying in a hospital bed. I can't speak. There's a lady in the next bed. She knows I can't answer her, but she talks to me once in a while. And the doctor comes in to see her, and I work in the system, so he knew who I was. And he picks up my chart and reads it, puts it down, and as he leaves, she said to me, he put me in here because I think I take too many pills and I drink too much, and he wants me to go to these meetings. And I remember looking up saying, if you wanted to get her clean, did you have to go do this? Couldn't we find an easier way of getting stuff? But a great thing happened through that. Elizabeth got mad at me one day, one of my sponsees, because she thought I worked too much. And she says, keep going and you're going to drop dead. Are you ready to die? And as calm as could be, I said, absolutely. And I knew I was. I started doing a lot of work. A friend of mine in Hawaii sent me a book 6 months after the first stroke. And the book changed my life. Gina hated it. She hated it. She kept saying I was doing my death work. And it wasn't. I was doing my life work. I was making a list of everything I still had to do. And I actually got it down to two things. And they have since been taken care of. And I don't know too many people who have gotten rid of all that baggage. And then I look at my sponsees. You know, we had a breakfast yesterday morning. We try to do this once in a while. I think there was 25 of us there. Of sponsee, I think we had, all together we did a list. There were 7 generations of us. That's how you live clean. All you have to, I mean, think about what the program asked us to do. Don't pick up and go to a meeting. Well, isn't that a concept? But you know what we do to that? What do you mean don't pick up? Don't pick up enough. We just take it and we run with it. And we find every excuse. And that's all it takes. My sponsor used to have me make a list. And that had to be on top of the list for the day. Don't pick up, go to a meeting. She said, now, write everything else that you have to do that day. And if you don't get anything else done but the top two, you had a successful day. I drove a lot of people in NA crazy, naturally, that's what I am. First, for the first couple of years, they went way back, NA went through it. Nazi thing. I thought they were ready to describe. And I wouldn't join that. So they used to say to me, we can't sell your tapes at the world, because one of the things I've always said to people, if you have found a way not to pick up, I don't care what the hell meeting you go to for, just don't pick up and stay alive. I don't think that is the only answer. Different people need different things, and we have to be okay with that. So I used to say to them, if you sold my tapes, would I make money? No. What the hell do I care? Well, down the road, they began selling my tapes. They passed their Nazi fees. And I spoke at the World in Florida. And I've had the opportunity of staying clean and traveling throughout the United States for NA. And I can't begin to tell you the miracles that really do happen in NA. But you just got to stop long enough to feel them. You know, Elizabeth and Tom and those guys went to India. And she came back and she said, Jesus Christ, even in India they know who you are. And one young man showed up, it was a regional convention. And he lived days away from where it was. And he didn't have meetings in his area. And he finally got some started 2 or 3 years later. And he said to Elizabeth, I had this one tape of this one lady, and I listened to it every single night for 3 years, and it was me. There's nothing the world can give me that would touch that. That's what living clean's about. The people we cross paths with. You know, we went to Montreal. That was a trip into itself. We we go to Montreal, and they told me there was a man, and he was the chairperson, but he had AIDS, and he'd gone into the hospital, and he wasn't there to introduce me at the banquet. So I looked at my sponsor, I said, come on, we're going to the hospital. So I went, and you got to understand, we're in the French. Nobody's speaking English. So I get there, and I had an interpreter, and he was dying. And I asked him, I said, are you taking medication? No, N-A-N-A. I said, stop. We don't have a vengeful higher power in our life anymore today. And I said, you need to take whatever you need to take to be able to die with some dignity. And I remember when I left there, I looked up and said, and if I'm wrong, take it out on me, not him. I went down to speak that night at the banquet. And I could hear a pin drop. It was like 1,500 people. And I said, what happened? They said, you don't know? They delivered him to the convention to introduce me. And he said, I was his angel sent. Nothing can ever touch that. That's what happened. That's what happens when you stay in recovery. Little stuff, you start to meet people. I can't tell you how many people here came up to me today. You were the speaker at my first convention. I heard your tape. You know, why would you ever want to change any of this? And it's not, trust me, I'm not one of those people, I love going to meetings. Fuck that. There are nights I have to drag my ass up because I know I need to do it. But it doesn't mean I'm all gung ho. I hear people share that they get up in the morning and they turn their will over to God. I envy the shit out of them. I get up in the morning and for the first half hour, I run on self-will. And after a half hour of hitting a wall, I say, okay. Okay. I've come many, many different paths to find my spirituality. I couldn't go the God route. It didn't work for me. So I found Harry. Harry was my higher power and we got along fine. And Harry lasted me a long time. And then these strange people began to enter my life who had very Eastern beliefs. And little at a time, I found my place. And sometimes I miss, you know, a couple of months ago, I got a death sentence from the doctor. He was wrong, by the way. But we didn't know he was wrong for a month. And I said to Elizabeth, God, it was so much easier being Catholic. And she said, why? I said, because when you're Catholic, you can bargain with God. You know, if you give me this, I'll do this. But where my belief system is now is, give me the strength to handle what happens. And that isn't always so nice. I like the bargaining once in a while. Life has been good. I am in the same relationship for 18 or 19 years I can never remember. We have a 5-year-old. Part of the problem I have is the strokes affected short-term memory. So, here's Gina. Gina gets so mad at me because I'll remind her of something she did in 1981. And she'll say to me, yeah, but you don't know what you had for breakfast this morning. And I don't. It's, life is different since the strokes. Doesn't mean it's bad. John thinks they're bad. because I have to leave the keys to my car under the seat when I get out, or I won't know where they are. And that drives him nuts. Thank God we live in a place nobody bothers you. But I've learned how to compensate with that. And I love my job. I love where I live. Sitting at a breakfast with 6 and 7 generations of sponsees, there isn't a drug in the world that can take you to those places. Not a drug. So I said, if we're going to do this workshop a little different. First, I want to just say something about, there was a man named Father Dan Egan. He was a junkie priest. And Dan knew me when I was out in the streets. And we always used to kid about it. I was out there one time and he came up to me. I didn't know who he was. And he says, are you okay? I said, get away from me. It had to be pills, because if I was on any kind of pills, I was nasty. And he doesn't get away. And he comes back. Did you eat dinner tonight? I said, I'm going to tell you one more time, get away from me. And there's a crowd starting to gather outside. And then he makes the big mistake. I'm a hooker, for God's sake, on the street. He says to me, do you have the money to eat dinner? And I screamed as loud as I could, get the fuck out of my face. I don't turn no tricks with no fucking priest. And it was Father Dan. Years later, we were in Chicago at a world convention. They had those round tables. And he was sitting opposite me. And I wrote a note and I passed it around to him. And he opened up the note, and he read it and started to cry, and he touched his heart. And what I wrote was, 19 years ago, did you ever think you and I would be sitting at a Narcotics Anonymous convention with 1,900 recovering addicts? We came in off those streets together, him and I. And the one thing he used to always say, people think addicts are suicidal, that they want to die. He said, that's the biggest fallacy in the whole world. All addicts want is the pain to go away. And he said, you went seeking spirituality where there was none. You just knocked on the wrong door. And I want to thank you for giving me a place to be free in that addict and learning how to live clean. So what we're going to do now is we're going to open up the mic. Because I can't talk anymore. So anyone who wants to share, come up, but we're going to begin with Freddie.
Thought this would happen. My name is Fred and I'm an addict. And Fran saved my life. Or she put me in a position where I can say, I get around her and I cry. She had me in Canada, the same thing. But I can remember dodging her, you know. She had a boss, and I had a boss dope fiend, because he thought I had post-Vietnam stress syndrome. I said, I'll take that. Because he wasn't telling me not to use no more. And Fran would say, come here. I said, oh, no, I got to go see Tom. And when Tom was on vacation, and I had to see her, and I knew I didn't want to be really, really let her know too much. So I sit down there, and she says, you're angry. And I says to her, just as clearly, I says, No, I might be a little perturbed. She says, get out of here. Go use, hurt yourself, and then I can help you. And I did. I came back, and she helped me. And I could go on and on with it. I'm just going to make it short so everybody else can get the mic. But I want to say what Living Clean has allowed me to do through NA. I was a single parent. When I first got clean, my daughter Ashley was 4. Before I got clean, I remember leaving there just to go cop one time. I said, this is going to take a minute. So I looked down. She was asleep. I walked out the door to go up the block. When I come back, she was standing on the stoop trying to put her clothes on. And for 15 years, she said she left me. She said, yeah, you left me, Dad. I said, no, no, no. I lied for 15 years. I finally had the courage to tell her, yeah, you know, I did go use drugs. But what NA has allowed me to do with my child, I'm not just a father, I'm her dad. I'm her dad. And she just gives me such great joy. Now she's 21. She goes to Buffalo State University. And God knows that if I was using, she wouldn't be there. You know what I mean? I make sure, they tell me I spoil her. But my mother, other than this one, tells me as long as she's doing the right thing, I should do the right thing by her. And that's all through NA. And I am one that loves NA. Thanks for letting me share.
Please go sit there, Mr. President.
I'm an addict called Roger. You know, I'm from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and I'm real grateful to be here. And I was just sitting here thinking back how blessed we are to have Fran Orr as a member of this awesome fellowship. And it was Free State Convention in Baltimore and Inner Harbor. She opened that convention up with all her sponsees with their busy seasons. And I think about that, Fran, because it was like relationships and having friends in my life where I could be honest with at any given point. And they're there and we're there for each other. You know, this process of growing up in recovery, I'm just glad I'm, you know, I got clean 16 and a half years ago and I'm staying clean. And, you know, and on a lot of days, I'm a person that's living with AIDS, and no matter what, I don't use. And I have friends in my life that be there for me through all the pain, through all the joys, and we be there. And it's just an awesome way to live. So to just, you know, get clean, stay clean, we got to come clean. And no matter what, no shortcuts. And that's what I love about you. You don't cut the chase. We keep coming back. Thanks.
Hi, friend. My name is Donald. I'm an addict. Hey, Tana. Bitch. That is my name for Fran, and she knows it, and she has names for me, and it's all okay. Okay, I'm one of them railroad people. And my life was about denial. I did not believe I was an addict because I had this job and all that other stuff. And Fran said, listen, go to the hospital, go do 5 days, go to the gym, go work out, and you'll be fine. I said, okay. I went to the hospital. It was 60 days. There was no gym. She called me up and said, don't fucking talk to me till you do 35 days, and hanged up on me.
Okay.
And when, after a while, you got to go out on a pass, right? And they used to bring NA meetings in, and I never forget, I went out on a pass and I came back in, and she's sitting in the meeting sharing. And when I walked in the meeting, all I could look at her and say, bitch. And I say that because you know how you get to that turning point in a life where you can go here or you can go there, right? She saved my life because I always went, it's been 18 years since she dofing me in the hospital. The other day I got her back before I came out here because I was at work and I was saying, I wonder what kind of sunblock I need to bring out here. So it's 12 o'clock in New York and I call Fran. And she says, hello. And I said, Fran, it's Donald. She said, it's 6 o'clock in the morning, Donald. Which made the sunblock question seem a whole lot more stupider now. But fuck it. You know, I can't tell you how much I love her. It's from the bottom of my heart because it's like she's literally saved my life. 18 years, a lot has happened, good and bad. But I ain't shot no dope. Fuck it. So, to John, wherever John is, I don't know how you did it. To the bitch, I love you with all my heart. Thank you for letting me share.
I'm an addict named Anthony. And I called a friend this morning. And I love you. I told her I was in a treatment facility in 1993 when I just had got there after living here for 3 years and doing those things that we do on Cahill and Kalakaua where you send your girl. didn't know I was on my way to Narcotics Anonymous. And I lived here for 3 years. And I left. And it wasn't really by my choice. But I left like they asked me to. Because, you know, while I was here, it was always, you know, I couldn't get enough money. You know, I always ran out, you know. And I'd be sitting around the house, and I said, well, if you'd have did this, I'd have this. Fact of the matter is, I don't think, I probably couldn't have, it just wasn't for me to fathom that I would probably ever have enough money. You know, because at that time, I was messing with those, I call them eggs, you guys call them rocks. And I just couldn't keep no money in my pocket. And I left here, and I went to San Diego, California. And by the grace of God, and I went to, I think the state sent me on a vacation and they paid for it. And they had some people in place when I got out of that place and they said, well, you need to go to treatment, you know. And I was like, well, what's treatment? And you guys know I listened to them and that wasn't it, you know. They had to tell me again. And I made it to treatment. And I couldn't go to the convention. Didn't know what a convention was. And the counselor, and this is ironic, I called Fran this morning after finding out I was in line, and I was asking someone, did they know Fran O? And it was one of her sponsees, and I don't see her. Are you in here? There she is, right there. What's her name, Elizabeth? Renee. She said, I know her. You want me to call her? I said, yeah. let me let her know how she messed up my life. I can't use no more. She, I found out the truth, you know what I mean? And so she called her, and she said, hi. I said, I love you. That's all I could get out, man, because after hearing your story, and I listened to everything from calling the cop to cop, the whole nine yards. I said, you know what? I might not have went to that convention, but I think I'm in the right spot. You know, and that was my clean date is May 28th, 1993. And the counselor that brought that tape, he's down the street at Denny's. and I just want to let you know that it's two of us that come out of that house. And we have the same clean date. And both of us are clean today, and we both work in the field. And I just wanted to let you know from the bottom of my heart, there's people like you that let a junkie like me know that I ain't have to get loaded. No matter what. You know, I didn't know that people stayed clean. You know, I remember sitting in that treatment center and the guy took a 60-day token. I said, he lying. Ain't nobody in the world been clean 60 whole days. You know what I mean? He full of shit. If you be newer than me and you're in here, you probably got a drug problem. Or a living problem. Like the books say, you know. Some of this stuff was jumping off before we even took a drink or a drug. I love this program. I eat it. I sleep it. I'm having issues, though, and it's just a couple of places that is really just, I don't know. It's, you know. And I heard that guy talk about his daughter. I'm a single parent today, and it's from rough edges in that spot. I got a 16-year-old and a 10-year-old. I don't think I'm meeting all their requirements. So I think I'll just keep coming back. Maybe I'll learn a little bit more. Thank you.
Hi, family. My name is Denise, and I'm an addict. I'm from Boston, Massachusetts. I stood up because I didn't see any women getting in the line. And I'm going to tell you what, I didn't have any trouble getting in the line, sliding the money under the door. So I got up and I wanted to say thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. You know what? I'm the kind of person that needs to feel you. And then I know I've been to a good meeting. Well, you had me crying. And I am just so grateful that there are people like you that exist. Because without you, there wouldn't be that many addicts clean. I need to say that. Somebody took my hand when I first came in here. I got 16 years clean. And my... God rest her soul. My sponsor is dead now. But she's still sponsoring me. Right? I know I should have a, you know, in-person one. But I'm going to tell you, until I can find someone, maybe like her, to take my dead sponsor's place, she's going to have to keep it up. But maybe I can get your number later, and we can do this thing long distance, because I got a cell phone, and I can call all over the country.
I'm Jeffrey. I'm an addict. And I didn't take anything to change the way I feel today. In 1989, Monterey, I was at my first convention, and I'd been doing that service-based recovery and talking clean and living dirty and every so often doing a little dope deal so I could get by and make a little extra money. And I was on the fence about whether I was going to stay in NA or not. And then I heard Fran share, and she was talking about some things that were happening when she had 3, 4, 5 years clean, like carrying a gun and doing some other things like that. And she started talking about the solution, and it changed my life and saved my life. Thank you, friend.
I'm an ASP. My name is Judy. And I'm from Rochester, New York, Northern New York region. I'm one of those addicts that carried Fran's tape around for my good first 3 years of recovery. Dubbed it, passed it out, and a lot of it had to do with some newer members who were coming in who were still doing those behaviors. And I remember Fran talking about how she carried a gun for a certain amount of years. At, you know, before somebody finally told her, you know what, Fran, you don't need to carry a gun to a meeting anymore. And am I right? And one of the things that I need to say is I'm so grateful for our predecessors, for the people who stick around and still come to meetings, you know, with multiple years, 10 plus, 15 years plus, 20 years plus. A lot of us leave for whatever reason that might be. The other thing I wanted to say is what hope that you give me, because I also am an addict who's a felon. I was a felon. I had been tipping bottles in that career for a long, long time. And in 2000, I crossed the stage, and I do this to offer hope. In 2000, I crossed the stage in my city and accepted a master's degree, and now I have a license to teach children, which is one of the ways that I pay back my debt to society. The children that I teach are most definitely future Narcotics Anonymous members. War zone, emotionally disturbed kids, and it's something that I do. And I had the opportunity, and I loved what you just said, because it made me once again reinforce what I'm doing, is that I took in one of my 12-year-old students for the entire summer to give his family some respite. And what a wonderful way for me to be able to heal from my inability to parent my own child. So I'm able to kind of use that experience, and I love to hear it from you that it's something similar that we have and that we share, that I'm able to heal from my inability to parent through being able to pay some of this back. And I owe it to Narcotics Anonymous. Everything that I have today, I owe to Narcotics Anonymous, and I have to remember that on a daily basis when I want to judge y'all and think, you know, I'm tired of being around them sick people, I'm tired of going to meetings, and I have to be reminded on every day that everything that I have, Narcotics Anonymous gave me. Thanks for letting me share.
I'm Kristen. I'm an addict originally from New York City and then from Los Angeles, California. I was trying to remember, you know, when I got clean, I first met Fran in the St. Malachy's meeting off of Times Square back in 1983. And I was sitting there trying to remember, there weren't that many women with a lot of clean time around then. Why didn't I ask Fran to sponsor me? And then I sat here in this meeting and listened to her and remembered, she scared the piss out of me. That's why I didn't ask her to sponsor me. And Fran, I have to say this. Oh, well, I might have scared her too a little bit. But in any event, I want to tell any newcomers who are here today, I haven't had to use drugs since 1983. And to me, living the program is living free. And learning how to live free, one more degree of freedom with every day that passes. I am free because of Narcotics Anonymous and because of people like Fran. So many more people are living free today. And Fran, I want to thank you so much from the bottom of my heart, and to all of the other people who have given their recovery what they were so freely given. At this point, I'm going to pass the mic to someone else, and thanks for letting me share.
Hi, I'm Tina in the Manatee. I want to tell my sponsor, thank you for sharing. You know, we had a breakfast yesterday with Seventh Generation, and when I was thinking about how long I've been with this, what you call her, Donald, bitch? You know what, Donald? Last year, when I got 19 years, she called Willa T on her phone from Hawaii. Somehow, tell that bitch I said congratulations on 19 years. You know what? The whole meeting fell out laughing. And it was Willa T anniversary, right? Now, Donald, in 2 weeks, I'll have 20 years. And Donald, now that I think about it, I've been with her for 20 years. You know, I got her at first at St. Malachi. I wish you was to with this lady that was talking about Malachi. Girlfriend, I remember when we went to that meeting on Wednesday, right, Fran? And Fran was telling me, raise your hand, because you need to share. And I told her, Missy, you need to raise your hand, because you need to share, too. And I was a newcomer. But it was women that like this that kept me coming. You know, and I appreciate her so much that kept me coming, you know, with these 20 years, because I didn't think I was going to make it. You know, yesterday when we was at breakfast, I was just crying up a storm, right? Because I was thinking, Lord, I didn't know I was going to be here all this time. But N.A. kept me here, you know. N.A. kept me here, and it let me know that, Tina, no matter what, you got to stay here. And they tell me in Florida, because I done moved to Florida from New York, they tell me, oh, you got 19 years, and you still making meetings? And I want to let them know, my sponsor used to carry a gun. I still know how to rob your monkey ear. So, you know, don't kick up my shit. Let me keep making meetings, okay? You know, Fran, I got to tell you, I love you madly, you know. Even with what you had the stroke, and now I got, you know, since I had the MS, I got to keep going. I ain't let nothing and nothing, you know, keep me from stop making meetings. You know, thank you all for letting me share.
I'd like to thank Fran and everyone that shared. Can we please circle up? In reading of just for today.
Hi, family, Shelly and Addie. From New York. Just for today. Tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program. I will try to follow it to the best of my ability. Just for today, through NA, I will try to get a better perspective on my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new associations, people who are not using and who have found a new way of life. So long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear.
Oh, I'm sorry.